It's Song Talk Radio.
Welcome to Song Talk Radio, the show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of songwriting. We share tips, tools, and techniques, and together we all become better at writing songs. Dialing in from our Toronto headquarters, I'm Neil Modi, and with me, my co-host, Phil Emery. How you doing, Phil?
I'm doing quite well, and it's exciting because we actually had a sunny, warm day here in St. John's, Newfoundland, so it's very exciting. I mean, it's not that warm, but, it's 19 degrees, but people are actually walking around in shorts.
So oh, no. That's... That'll happen. Canadians at the first sign of spring.
There's always some guy in shorts.
Exactly. It's always a guy. All right. Okay. And for everyone else, please send your comments and questions and weather reports to at Song Talk Radio on Facebook or Instagram or feedback at songtalk.ca for the email. And we'll share your thoughts on the show. And please visit songtalk.ca to see the show post for this episode, to find links to resources we mention, and to download lyric and chord sheets to follow along with the songs that we feature. Tonight, we're very happy to welcome singer-songwriter Jessica Stewart to the show. How are you doing, Jessica?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here.
Great to have you on the show. So glad you could join us. And before we get to Jessica's great song, just another heads up about our songwriting challenge for 2025. This year, we're proposing to write a song in an odd time signature. So check out our resource page on the website, songtalk.ca. We got a couple of episodes, a few episodes actually, of past topics where we've talked about odd time signatures and a few other videos and other resources and stuff. So you can start playing around with things. And of course, as the songwriting challenges in previous years, Phil and I will share our answers to the challenge first, and then we'll showcase our listeners' songs, which has always been a blast.
Always fun. Have you started on yours, Neil?
I have not. I have a notion of what angle I want to take on it. That's it.
Do you guys know that that's actually one of my specialties? That is actually something I do all the time. That's writing in odd meters and making children dance. Making people dance to odd meters is like one of my specialties. Normalizing odd meter usage. That is actually one of my signature things.
That's amazing. Well, you should definitely contribute to our challenge then. That would be so cool. Oh my God. Making people dance to it. That's the tough part, isn't it?
Yeah. That's the tough part. Yeah. Making children dance isn't hard.
That's true. But yes, making people dance in five. It's always a five or seven or nine or whatever. It's definitely a joy to do that because then you know you've sort of succeeded to make people feel things, right? Feel it correctly. Feel it the way that is natural.
In something that isn't very natural for most people. Unless it's a waltz, I guess. Okay. And just another heads up about the changes to our Song Talk meetup. Group. Previously, you're getting notifications for our meetup groups via meetup.com. Our time with meetup.com is going to be ending in a few weeks. But in the meantime, and afterwards, you will get notifications via our own Song Talk newsletter. So if you haven't done so yet, please go to songtalk.ca, subscribe to our newsletter, put your name and email address in there, and you'll get all notifications for our meetups, as well as the latest episodes when they come out and anything else that we feel like telling you.
Yeah.
It's always a great time at the meetup. We do the meetups online over Zoom as we started doing during the pandemic and just kind of continued on because we started connecting with songwriters all over the place.
Yes, the online. Yeah, the online one is great because we have people from literally all over the globe. It is so cool, like Australia and Ireland and the US and St. John's. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. And of course, the ones in Toronto are continuing now at the Imperial Pub. So again, sign up for our newsletter, songtalk.ca, and you'll get the announcements as to when and where they're happening.
Indeed.
And Phil, you found a little interesting tidbit on A Long and Winding Road.
Yes, I like many people, like many songwriters, are a huge Beatles fan. And I especially love the really early Beatles stuff. I always say that the first couple of albums, which were really just collections of singles, they didn't really have albums at the time. But the first couple of albums are sort of the way, they're the framework for the perfect pop song. You know, you can pull those apart and you can learn how to write a perfect little pop song. One song which was really weird, which never really sat well with me, is A Long and Winding Road. It always sounded kind of weird. And when I was doing session work, I had to play that song a lot, and it was really boring and unpleasant. And one time, the singer that we were backing got so confused, we had to stop, and it just got ugly and worse after that. But one of the reasons, it turns out, that it is such a weird song, and if you listen to it now, it's quite obvious, is that the bass, which was played by John Lennon, because, of course, Paul McCartney was actually playing the piano. John Lennon was either high or didn't care, or perhaps maybe a bit ticked off, as happens when you're in the studio. He was playing a whole bunch of wrong notes, and not just minorly wrong notes, like really wrong notes. Like it's, and when you listen to it, the bass is very low in the mix. But if you really listen to it, it's really obvious. And that's why I didn't like it, because it sounded so odd. And at first I thought it was just kind of some kind of weird classical orchestration thing, but he was actually full of mistakes. So don't feel bad if you make mistakes, because even the Beatles do it once in a while. Now, Neil, did you hear the mistakes when you listened to it again?
Well, when I listened to it again, when I listened intently to the bass, yeah, I could hear the mistakes, especially that YouTuber that you sent to me earlier he sort of dissected the whole thing and showed you exactly what John Lennon was doing. I am curious though, because at that point, this was on Let It Be, I think, right? And at that point, they were not performing live, like, and Paul McCartney was happy to play every track on other songs, so why didn't he just bloody play the bass on this song? Maybe that would have left John Lennon out entirely. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like if he wasn't happy with Lennon's bass, then why not just play the bass yourself?
It was probably the limitation of the tracks, because I don't think they may have only had four or maybe eight tracks. So they may have had to track the bass and the drums at the same time or something. That's really common back then.
But historically, I mean, it's never been one of my favorite Beatles songs, but it's always been, it's always been something kind of odd about it. I never could put my finger on it, but I always enjoyed, you know, the string arrangement and the vocal line and all that sort of stuff, all the wonderful things about it. But it never put my finger on, maybe the bass line's kind of odd.
Odd indeed. Anyways, send around the link to the YouTube and then take a listen to it again. And I'm sure you will hear things that are so out of tune.
Well, I was going through my iTunes library. I was going through my iTunes library and I just searched for Long and Winding Road. And of course, I've got a bunch of Paul McCartney solo live concerts. And you listen to that one and everything is spot on perfect.
I would hope so.
Finger. Yeah. Right. And it's like, oh, okay. Now I hear the difference. The difference that quality makes. Okay. very interesting. Okay. Toronto-based guitarist, songwriter, vocalist, and koto player Jessica Stewart, a.k.a. Jessa, has made a music career writing and performing harmonically adventurous and devastatingly honest indie jazz rock tunes around the world. Stewart is also a rare professional female guitarist with dozens of side player credits ranging from Mervish Productions 6 to Classic Albums Live to Idiotech, and loves to put her chops in the spotlight when playing her unique, musically playful original songs as the Jessica Stewart Trio. When not on festival stages, you'll find Jessica producing albums for other artists in studio on international and local airwaves with a Japanese top 40 single, 5 songs in the Canadian songwriting competition finals, and as the subject and composer of CBC's most viewed documentary of all time, Finding Fukue, with over 15 million views. Welcome to the show, Jessica Stewart.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Awesome to have you. And of course, you also host this songwriter series, JS Presents, at the Transat Club in Toronto. We used to hold our meetup at the Transat Club, and I'm pretty sure that in the other room you were performing one time I was there hosting the meetup, and I was like, oh, this is kind of interesting. I don't know if that was quite the event, but why don't you tell us a little bit about that series?
Yeah, Basically in 2018, I sort of got some wait lists and rejections for different things after taking a pause in songwriting after a frustrating release, which I felt was my best, but was unacknowledged in the media. And so I needed a little break after putting all of my eggs in that basket. And so I applied for some different opportunities to do songwriting things and sort of start writing material again after a little break. And I got waitlisted and rejected for most of those things. And then I thought, why do I need someone else? I'm going to go to the Transact, which is a wonderful community space with residencies. I've never asked them for a residency. I will make this a songwriter's residency where I have to, myself and the one artist I will curate and feature each month will have to world premiere at least one song, which has never been presented or released in public before. So because of that, and it's a monthly, I have now, I think we're on episode 59 this month, and that means I have 65 new tunes in the book. And also my songwriting has incredibly evolved by having this deadline every month. And then on top of that, I am, as my mom calls my songs her grand songs, but I guess that makes me surrogate mother to another maybe 70 tunes, which were written by my 59 guests. Some wrote more than one. And so there's this whole legacy of material, which was maybe just finished because of this deadline that I randomly imposed, or created because of it. And so that is really exciting to me to be able to help generate the inspiration. And I know for myself, I'm deadline driven. So if I have like a tour or a recording or a public accountability deadline of a monthly gig, I know that that certainly puts the fire under me to complete things. And it's been just incredible. So now the songs just tumble out. It was more labor in the beginning, you know, to write for a deadline, which I've done for many years before that, but it's been a wonderful thing. And I've gotten to feature some really world-class, like there's so many world-class songwriters based in Toronto or passing through Toronto. And it is my pleasure to be able to shine a spotlight on people doing amazing things, whether or not they're acknowledged by the media or the public or the community for that work. So that's something I love. It's JS Presents, and it's the third Saturday of every month at the Transact Southern Cross from 5 to 7 p.m. So it's a nice time to be able to do multiple other things. And yeah, it's very special to be in the audience for the world premiere of something and to be part of the first audience. And then, you know, maybe 9 months, a year later, you might hear it on someone's album in a produced form. And it's really quite special to know that you heard it first.
Yeah, yeah, very cool. Well, yeah, yeah, that's an amazing thing because it's really reaching out to the community and giving back to the community and all those wonderful things. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, so, if you're going to be involved in the music industry in any kind of serious way, you really have to network and be around people and get involved. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a great thing to do. You know, make your own opportunities.
Okay, we're going to be talking about Jessica's song, Price of My Love. And remember, you can find the lyric sheet on the show post at songtalk.ca. So follow along. So let's have a listen and then we'll chat about it.
Yeah. And while you're listening to it, pay attention to when Jessica introduces a variation on the verse. It's really cool. Okay, here we go. Oh,
price of my love.
Wow. Lovely.
Lovely.
Thank you. Thanks, Neil. Thanks, Phil.
It's really cool how you go into the chorus. It would be so easy to kind of go into that big chorus, you know, where the drums come in and you got this big kind of raise to the chorus. But it's a chorus, but it's a little bit sort of unusual, but it's not, it doesn't jump out of the song. It feels part of the song, but it's very subtle. It's really neat.
Thank you. It's a little refrain-y. You know, I have had this conversation a little bit with a few people about the difference between a refrain and a chorus. And usually the refrain is kind of like the ending portion of the, it's verse. Like the continuation. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So it kind of has like a little, it's a hybrid of a slightly of a refrain and a chorus, I guess.
Yeah. And it certainly is that, because especially with the tagline at the end, with the I mean, that your chorus technically is only the point where you put in the actual title, Price of My Love, all the verse refrain, because the verses do have their own little refrains already, right? So then what is this part? I think in some senses it is a chorus, but because of that repetition of, but it revolves, and I love the way that it revolves throughout the song. You give me my love, give you my love. That's the price of my love, dull compared to my love. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you're transcending into the stars and even contemplating mortality. Like it's kind of, I mean, as soft as this song is in the storytelling, it's kind of epic. It really spans this enormous time frame, right?
One of the nice things also was the variation in your verse. Like, so often people just do the same verse all the way through, but you know, it's, I always wonder when to do the variation. If you do it the second time, then it's not as much of a variation because you haven't established it enough. It was really nice the way you kind of just brought up so much energy by just going up, like, I think just, it's one octave, I think, isn't it?
Actually, it's something I've done in a few songs, not in the majority of my songs, but it's a thing I used. And probably it's an influence maybe from Soundgarden, loving Chris Cornell, because there are several songs in which he does the entire verse down the octave, but he has a crazy upper range as well. And so he does that. Obviously, as a woman, I have a more limited vocal range than a man who can also do falsetto and all of that. But partway through the second verse, it felt that it needed to go up, and then it stayed up there for the third verse. So it's like it actually goes half of the verses, you know, one and a half of the verses are down the octave, one and a half of the verses are up the octave. And then that results in the final chorus, because it's coming from up the octave. I also altered the notes of the refrain slash chorus slightly because I'm coming from up there and it needed to feel natural to become one with the refrain chorus. Again, instead of jumping down, you want to kind of keep the through line, keep people with you. So,
and you opted to do that instead of, say, like a modulation, because that would have done, I wouldn't say ostensibly the same thing, but kind of the same thing in terms of the energy map of the song. It could have, you know, up the thing. Is that something you might have contemplated, or something you've used that kind of tool in another song?
I have, like, maybe only literally one song of like 175 songs I've written have I done a modulation. And it was because it was like a jazzy tune. It felt like a standard. And so there was a moment when it felt like that was required to lift for the final chorus coming out of the bridge of that song. So I did that. But I felt like with this song, there's a meditative quality. There's this kind of this, it's how life goes in a cycle, and how, you know, love and how, you know, all these different things just kind of repeat themselves, but in different ways. And then how we kind of accumulate more knowledge or know-how or wisdom or more something tools as time goes on. It's kind of like this, like, it kind of has this real cycling, regular thing. So I think for me, I wouldn't have thought of actually doing a modulation, because that would take away from the meditation that this song feels like it can also be interpreted as.
Yeah, that's definitely the right choice. Cause the octave lift in some ways is it's not even that obvious necessarily. Cause I think your singing quality up there is just as, it can assume that meditative, contemplative kind of tone. It's not, you're not in belting it up, you know, because typically sometimes when singers go up an octave, they're really, you know, giving it like the real oomph and right. really belting out a song.
Well, it couldn't be. And to match this is like extremely personal, you know, these songs, even though they have a universal quality, that's the idea, is that people can relate or get lost in it, or just get lost in another person's experience and be able to relate to portions of it. And so all of these, you know, some songs aren't as personal. They're just like funny little one-offs and you do a little thing. But like, for me, I'm kind of that really honest. I'm kind of like really share of my personal feelings, because I find that the more that something is a feeling is current events, the more different ideas you have to tap into to represent that idea, you know, both tangible imagery, but also, you know, in the past, I think one of the ways in which I've sort of evolved as a songwriter is that in the past, I wanted to talk about my feelings, a la Joni Mitchell, you know, but not as well as, I didn't do it as well as her, you know, she's amazing. But so I wanted to do that, but I sort of didn't maybe realize that I needed to balance it out with more tangible imagery, actual things that you can picture, which are definitive. And so in this song, I was sort of that idea of that, which I didn't realize on my own, by the way. I was asked to be a guest musician on a song, a storytellers series, which would have four or six storytellers telling stories like in this particular way, and then one musical guest. And then my charge was that I had to do a storytelling session, like workshop session, with this woman who teaches that at York University, or was at the time. And then I have to deliver this story and maybe I can take on her notes that she gives or not, and then play the song related to the story at the event. And in that, she taught me a really interesting thing, which quite affected my songwriting, which is that they did studies with people with electrodes on their heads. And when people describe things clearly that are, you can picture, even if you weren't there, that the same parts of the brain light up that do that, or are fired up that do with memory. So it becomes as if you kind of relate to those images. When you can picture something, it's as if you feel you were there because you saw it. So now it's almost a part of your memory, even if you weren't there. And so that is like this incredible quality. And so when I heard that, that made a really strong impact. And I think that this song might have been written not too long after that. And so when I'm talking about the painted villas on the hill, you know, all of those kinds of images, that is meant, you know, I'm trying to say that what I have is, you know, what love is, what a person has to offer is like greater than even the brightest or whatever. And so you could say that way, you know, instead of just saying it in kind of idea words. Right. And so anyway, that's something that I enjoyed in this song, is the different use of, you know, imagery, and even the overflow thing, you can picture a cup overflowing, you know, all of that. So I thought that was successful.
Yeah. It is really visually rich, and it really paints. It does totally paint the pictures. But it's interesting what you say about memory, because mm-hmm. of course every person's different. So they're gonna not literally see mm-hmm. what's depicted in the lyrics or what you were thinking of when you wrote it, but they'll see their own version of it. But it's still just as, you know, compelling.
Yes.
Does this song take a long time to write, or is it sounds like you no. did a lot of kind of searching?
I mean, the truth is, you guys might think this is ridiculous, but like I write most of my songs in like between 2 and 7 hours max. Yeah. So I don't, it's because of the series. It's because of the series, like they just tumble out. And also because when I was, I used to write just for my trio. This series, the JS Presents series, it was the first time that I was sort of writing for solo. And so I used to arrange songs more. When I would write before for my trio, I'd write for that ensemble. I'd write for the sound that we were going for, kind of like a jazzy dance floor jazz at plus kind of thing, and highly arrange like the drums and the bass and write it all concurrently. So like really composing, you know what I mean? So when I ended up doing this songwriter series, and the pay is what it is, and I'm not going to bring in more people and not pay them. That's not how I work as a professional musician. So I had to do it on my own. And so this made me actually think about songwriting in a completely different way. And so all these things, it's just like, you know, you learn stuff over time and then it kind of like comes in, like eventually it like it seeps through whether you intended to or not. And so that's what happened with this one.
Is the chorus in a different time signature?
No, it's not. It just...
feeling is different.
Yeah, the snare falls in a different...
It's a six part... Yes, the feel is different. It's also just a six-bar phrase altogether. So it's not like a balance, like it's not an eight-bar, you know, it's not two sets of four. So that might make it feel that way as well.
Because actually just having the, not doing the eight-bar that we're all used to, that really does kind of give it a different feel.
Uh-huh.
And does kind of almost give it that feeling of being in a different time signature. It just sits in a bit different way, which gives it the contrast that you need for a chorus. Because it's so easy when choruses sound just like the verse that it doesn't sound very chorusy, but this, you have the contrast, and it's without having to do the big drums and the big, you know, jumping up to doing a fifth jump or something like that.
No, but in a prosody sense, it's very strong that way, because it kind of lends to this kind of etherealness of the whole mood of the song. Like you could imagine the chorus being a straight four on the floor kind of bass and drums thing, it would feel very grounded, which wouldn't really support the song itself in a lot of ways, right? Because ideas you're having. I do find it interesting what you're saying about writing songs faster after you've had much more experience. I find the same thing that when the more experience you get, you kind of, I always relate it to, I mean, people say that I wrote it very intuitively, but I always ask them, well, how many years have you been doing this, right? And so you develop your intuition and you trust your decisions just like that a lot faster, and you don't contemplate things, and you just say, what I'm doing is right. It's a good decision, and I can move on with it, and it's solid, and it's good right out of the bat.
And maybe your editing ear is just tuned up, right? And so you can earmark even, like, I think one of the things that has happened with me as I like write a higher volume of songs more regularly now is that I just, I can, instead of feeling stuck on a thing which isn't right, when you're ready, you know, it's something isn't right. I'm able now to say that's not right, but it's just a placeholder right now. And I just don't attach too much stock to it. And that really helps me to move on, because, I've taught songwriting before. I've had some songwriting students, and I had this one student, and this is a funny example. I had this one student, and he had 1 million ideas, but he would like try to put a lot of them into the same song. And so I kept like, helping him whittle it down, because all the ideas become devalued when there's too many interesting ideas. And what a great problem to have. And I was just like, put it in your toolbox, strip it away, use it for something else. Like it's not gone. And so then I found an amazing example, because occasionally the initial idea that he would come up with was actually the weakest part. What built around the initial idea needed to be there for the other parts to be created. But in the end, it wasn't the strongest part. So I would encourage him, you know, to me, this is the hook. To me, this is the melody. To me, this is the chord progression. And this other thing can be discarded. And he would often say, but it was the originator of the song. I said, it doesn't matter. It actually doesn't matter. You got to where you needed to go. And then I found this example. I love Led Zeppelin. And I found this demo, which was put online, of the song In the Light. I'm not sure if either of you guys are familiar with Zeppelin much or that song In the Light, which is, I believe, on Physical Graffiti. Is that right? Can anyone confirm? Anyways, I think it's on Physical Graffiti. But I've always loved that song. It's like highly arranged. It's like rocks out. It's amazing. But the hilarious thing is that the demo has this like crappy Casio sounding keyboard playing this dumb little line. Like, sorry, it's sort of dumb. I mean, whatever. You call it whatever you want. It's charming in a way, but it never made it to the song. But it's definitely like the thing that started the whole song. And so when I heard that, I brought it to the songwriting student. I was like, you know, In the Light by Zeppelin. And then I showed him that. I'm like, look, they got rid of their initial idea too. This isn't just me saying that. This is actually a thing that happens. So it's just about sort of like, it feels like once you can get your sort of ego out of the way, because it's the ego which would say, and I'm not, this person, my songwriter, was not egotistical at all. So I'm not trying to say that. But once, but you know, our natural ego of, well, this is how the song happened. Like I got to hold on to this. But once you get that out of the way and you just actually listen to what the song wants, sometimes the song, you know, I'm sure you too have this experience as well. Sometimes the song, the narrative of the song goes in its own direction. It's not even necessarily what you intended, but it's leading there. And just to sort of like listen to the song, honor what's happening, and, you know, follow the flow. And so it doesn't necessarily mean keeping all of the parts with, like, but in the order of which they were created in the or as an order of importance, I find.
Well, it's, and which is true, because when you've just start writing songs, every song is so precious. Everything you've done is so precious because you haven't done that many. But if you've written lots and lots of songs, you realize, oh, but you know, I'll use it in something else, or I'll use it as the bridge for something else. You know, it also helps you make decisions quicker, because the second that's, it's better to just sort of say yes or no, as opposed to going, well, it might be okay, and bash around. And that's one of the great things about having deadlines. There's nothing worse than when I get hired to do a project and there's no deadline, because it just sticks around and nothing ever gets done. But you do so much better work when you say, hey, we have to do this in 3 days. Okay. You know, deadlines are a good thing.
Yeah. I would say same thing. I mean, acknowledging that those pieces that you thought were gold could be used for something else. Like it could, like I've had this experience too, where it's like the song didn't go in the direction that I expected, but like you say, you listen to what the song wants, and I ended up with something else. But in my back pocket, I was like, yeah, but I might go back to that initial idea and go this way instead. And that's a whole different song.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And then I get two for one.
Yeah. Two for one. Why not? Yeah.
and then you internally argue with yourself as to which version of the idea is better. But anyway,
it's a very tight song. It's only like 4 minutes, I think, isn't it?
I think it's like not that short. But I'm glad that you felt like it wasn't too long, because I mean,
I actually felt like, I mean, it's again, it's a different experience when you're staring at the lyric sheet and you want that next lyric to show up. It's like, where's that next lyric to show up? But if you just sit back and enjoy the song, I think it's great. And I think, prosody, it's a song that needs to take its time to a certain extent. You know, if you want that meditative thing, you're not going to rock through it in 2.5 minutes. That wouldn't serve the song very well.
And there's enough variation and interest that it doesn't feel long. And I think that's how you can tell a song is good. Because if a song does feel long, that means you need something new, and then you can do that through production or lots of different ways. But there's so many little things here that it didn't feel like it felt like a short song. In fact, I was thinking, gee, you know, they probably could have put another verse in there if you wanted, but,
I want to leave people wanting more, though, right? Because then they'll come back and listen to it again.
Exactly. Yeah, and you don't need more. It's perfect the way it is. But
no, it's great. But you're right about what you were saying before, Jessica. I mean, it almost sounds like you could have rejected some things that didn't make it into the song, because it is so focused on its ideas. The melodies are all it's very internally consistent.
Thank you.
Right. There's no bridge that takes it to someplace else. It's very focused and on the one meditation, so to speak, and it carries you through.
There's almost a bridge. There's this little,
I suppose. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a little twist that I thought,
okay.
But it didn't sort of go bridgey where it's, you know, like a middle eight, which is very different,
really,
but there was just this little sort of twist, and it was very subtle. And I really appreciated that. So,
you know, I think thank you very much. You guys are very, very kind. I was going to say, I not too long ago went back I can't remember why. Maybe I was like bringing this group to this song to Trio or something like that. And I was looking for something to share with them. And I ended up at one of the initial demos of this, like from early in the day. Like they're all from the same day, right? Like it's just like what time of day they were at. But my whole initial first melody was different. And I can't remember what it is. Like it's on my phone somewhere, but it was different. And I really liked it too. I remember thinking how much I liked it, but I deviated from it for the song again. So that's one of those interesting things as you get into the, and then you can listen back and be like, oh, this is how it started. And it's kind of neat to see that and to, yeah, to see that.
Yeah. But again, you can take that great melody and stick it on another lyric exactly. And you got another song.
There you go.
and if you have to crank out songs, that's what you do.
Yeah. Well, actually, I wanted to share something with you guys, if it's okay, which is not to do with this song, but a cool idea, since you have a songwriter audience and you're both songwriters, of something that I did. If I had not just a demo on my phone recording of it, then I would have maybe shared it. But I was coming back because of this deadline I told you guys about. I was coming back from a trip somewhere, and I knew I had very limited time before the performance date for the next song debut, like very, very, very little time. And so I thought I need to somehow make this process shorter because I come in with, I'm stockpiling song segments and song ideas. Either it's a rhythmic figure, a bit of a chord progression, a riff, or a melody bit. Very rarely it's lyric. Mostly it's a musical start and the musical vibe tells me what the topic range, like it triangulates what the topic must fit within, because there has to be congruity between those things. So anyway, I needed something to center it. And I knew I had a very short time. And I thought, for some reason, something someone said reminded me of this thing I had written as an 8-year-old, which was published in the school yearbook, amongst other students' things. I guess we had been asked to like write about, like maybe it was near Thanksgiving or something, and we were asked to write about what we were thankful for. But I had been re-shown this. I think my sister had sent me this when she refound it in the Chronicle, like just a few years ago. And so something someone said reminded me of the thing I wrote. And then I sought it out, and then I set it to music. And I did this crazy collaboration of multiple, so many decades later, with my 8-year-old self. I almost didn't even alter the words because they were quite special as it was. And I set it to music. But that whole project of doing a collaboration with your former self was really, really successful. And I wrote that song. That was the fastest song I've ever written. 35 minutes I wrote that song.
Wow.
It all just felt, it was just completely, I added literally one line is all I added. And the rest was perfect. And it is a perfect song. And I wish I could have shared it with you guys. It's a perfect song in that it follows none of the rules. But the song itself is a journey, and it is felt. It is a tearjerker. It is felt. It is honest and authentic. And so for me, it's like one of my favorite songs. But as a challenge, that's something maybe you guys could adapt. Find a piece of your writing or a piece of something from the past and do a collaboration with yourself. So in the end, I get the credits of both the lyricist and the musician. However, yeah, it was 8-year-old me who wrote the words. Yeah.
As long as you have the same social insurance number.
Yes, well, from 3 years after that.
Yes, exactly. Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a fantastic idea. It's such a great prompt. Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be very cool.
Great stuff.
Wow.
Great stuff.
Yeah, definitely have to come back on the show and talk about that song then.
I would love to.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. Okay. I believe I'm hearing the band. That's all the time we have on Song Talk Radio. Special thank you to Jessica Stewart. And where can our listeners find out more about you and hear some more of your music?
They can check out my stuff at Instagram. My handle would be Jessica Stewart Music. Stewart spelled S-T-U-A-R-T, like a first name. Also on Facebook, the handle is at Jessica Stewart Music. And on YouTube, it's Jessa, a.k.a. Jessica Stewart Music. And I have a website, which is jessicastewartmusic.com, but it is the least updated of all of those things. I would say that the current events are mostly on Instagram I don't spend too much time on social media because I am a busy gigging musician and playing a million bands as well. So you can see that stuff there too. But I have my monthly songwriter series at the very least.
Awesome. Okay. We'll definitely send our listeners there. We'll link to that from the show post for this episode. And of course, we want to hear from you too. So please send your comments on Facebook or Instagram to @songtalkradio or send us an email, feedback@songtalk.ca. And be sure to check out our YouTube channel for live performance videos and full episodes. And subscribe today to the Song Talk Radio podcast on your favorite podcast provider. And please support us at our Patreon page. You can visit songtalk.ca/support. Thanks to all who have supported us thus far.
Thank you.
You can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned on Song Talk Radio on our resources page on the website. And please join us at our next monthly Song Talk meetup, whether you're in Toronto for in-person meetups or anywhere in the world for our online meetups. It's free to join on Eventbrite now and free to attend the meetup. Bring a song and a lyric sheet and get constructive feedback from other songwriters. Stop by songtalk.ca for the link. You can follow me at neilmodi.com. You can follow Phil.
philemery.ca.
And Jessica, I think you've already said Instagram is the place to find you, the best place.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, be sure to follow Jessica on Instagram. And be sure to stop by our website, songtalk.ca, to browse past shows and find out how you can be a guest. Thanks for tuning in and
keep on writing. Good night, everyone.
So long.